Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on, what is September 5th?
6th? 6th, yeah, 6th.
And I guess the markets have been acting squirrely.
Yeah, they've been
which is
not
the,
happy.
Exactly what you like.
Yeah, I like it when there's at least some action, not one direction only. A little bit of action, you know.
And
yeah,
heaven forbid it just keeps going up or keeps going down.
It's just that, you know what, the problem is with it going up like it did a year ago, let's say. The problem is that it was so artificially pushed in a way. And it makes it difficult to make decisions. You can't, you know, even the bad stocks go up. And even how do you balance a portfolio unless you just throw it all in? So it makes it hard for somebody who is anything but just buy and hold, sit on it forever.
Right, which is like not what you want. Not what you want.
Right, I mean, I like the markets to go up and that's great. People make money, that's great. I'm all for it, 100%. But at the same time, different strategies drive different returns. So my strategy that we work with, well, we have a couple different, but one of them is, you know, at least something where you have price discovery, right? Which is, if you have a stock that's not doing well, it goes down. And a stock that's doing well, it goes up. That seems logical, right?
Oh, those days are over.
Oh, yeah. That's the problem. That's the problem. But I have a question for you. You know, on the DH Unplugged, you know, you always have a – you put up a roller coaster picture.
Yeah. I had a roller coaster picture, a different one from all over the world, some really good ones.
Did you run out?
Well, one time I put that wrecked car because it seems to me as though the market's wrecked.
Oh.
And so I decided to change the symbolism of the roller coaster to a wrecked vehicle, usually one parked in the desert and all rusted out.
Right.
You find it offensive?
No, not at all. I just found it to be all of a sudden a change, and I was wondering what was going on.
Yeah, that was it. It was just a symbolic change. I mean, I'll go back to the roller coaster if things go up and down and up and down, but I'm saying no.
All right, so you're going to keep with it. Now, what if it goes just straight up? What are you going to do then? You're going to put a rocket ship?
Well, that won't be for a number of years.
Oh, all right. Okay. But if it did, you would think about that.
Rocket ship would be good, yeah, but it's not going to happen. I mean, how is it? Explain to me how this would possibly happen in a million years, considering the European situation, considering the fact we have no manufacturing in this country and everybody's out of work to an extreme. I mean, give me an example of what you have to do. And everybody's already cut their costs so much that they can't possibly cut any more, and so sales are actually going to start to diminish.
Yeah.
So explain to me how the market is going to go skyrocketing.
It's obviously all going to be after President Obama's speech on Thursday evening on his new and improved jobs agenda.
And I'm assuming you're going to short the market.
Well, you know what? You know what I found? You know, talk about finding things crazy. But today, the White House announced, and you follow this, the White House announced that the jobs bill that President Obama is going to provide is going to be groundbreaking and, you know, altering the economy. In other words, they're endorsing it. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. The White House is all excited about President Obama's speech?
Wow, that's weird.
What does that mean? I mean, who cares if they think that? That's, you know, talk about, you know, like it's like a show giving itself its own Emmy.
So did you hear the one theory that the Obama's going to drop this bomb?
What?
He's going to give people a credit or cash, I guess, like welfare, if they apprentice themselves to or become interns at no pay for various knowledgeable people. I don't know. Like I could probably use a couple of these people, I suppose. You hear about any of this?
No, but this is obviously if it does happen, it's right back to our fly on the wall in the Warren Buffett and President Obama conversation they had a couple weeks ago. That's a perfect thing for Buffett to say.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I want people to work for me for free and the government can pay them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a classic Buffett.
Why would that even – that sounds so ridiculous. It sounds so ridiculous it's probably going to happen, by the way.
Well, you know, like I'm lining up. I can use a couple people to help me clean my office.
Right, so what you're saying is this. Let's say this differently. You're saying that in order to get further unemployment compensation, you'll actually have to be working somewhere to get it. So you're going to be working for the unemployment. Seriously, you'll be working to get it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess it's something like that.
And you're going to pay to bring the unemployment rate down. Therefore, during the election cycle, it looks really good.
It might look good, but it won't feel good.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, I would like to be the second after you to put out my for hire for nothing shingle for anybody that would like to work with me for free in any capacity, by the way. There's an unlimited amount of jobs available.
Yeah, well, I could teach people how to write columns.
Right.
I mean, we can both teach people how to podcast. Everyone needs to do that.
I need all sorts of things. All sorts of things. So
yeah, you
can
show
out.
People how to chart, how to do research and make charts for you.
Yep. And I could probably do that without even being involved.
Well, yeah, it probably could.
So the European banking system, you know, one of the big things you mentioned is, you know, how is the economy, the world going to do well? It looks like the entire banking system is starting to break apart. You look at what happened the last few days again, and the no confidence vote that happened in Germany for Angela Merkel, and the big – we'll talk about this in a second, but the big vote tomorrow that we'll see. It looks like that there's no further appetite for bailouts. It looks like Greece is not going to be able to make their deficit cut levels, and it looks like Italy – it's just waving in the wind, whatever happens. You know, all the strikes, they say, okay, we're not going to do the austerity. To the IMF, they say, okay, we are going to do austerity. And it's really quite a remarkable situation when you have Greece. Have you seen their bonds, their bond yields at all?
I think I did. They don't seem right.
Yeah, I sent you a chart of this. The two-year note is now yielding 50%.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, so in other words,
Greece 2-year yield 50%. That's not a bad investment.
Well, it gets better. I have another one for you. But the point is that the 2-year note, if you were to go and not that Greece is going to actually pay this because they go bankrupt in a second, but 2-year notes on Greece are yielding 50%. The 1-year note is yielding 82%.
Wow. That makes no sense at all.
It's all in a year because it's because what they're doing is they're pricing in a bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy will be the first people hit will be the newest or the ones that are revolving and maturing. So that's your 1 year.
Right.
And then 2 year, et cetera. So they have, we calculated, I think, close to about 11.5 billion euros worth of interest, just interest only, not on this, just generally speaking, next year due, interest only on the notes that they have outstanding. They can't pay this. And they can't lend in the markets because they're going to have to pay absurd rates.
I wouldn't mind buying a couple of these bonds on a whim.
80% yield, if you think about that, as long as you can make it a few months.
Yeah, exactly. You can pretty damn near get – right. But what if they get bailed out and then you still hold these bonds?
Yeah, that's great. Then you get your money back plus a heck of an interest
rate. You make like your money every year almost.
What we could actually do is maybe buy the bond and then – get an insurance policy, a CDS.
On the bond.
Yeah, CDS on the bond. And hopefully the spread between the two is still positive in your favor.
Could be. Probably isn't. Those things never work out.
Never work out. Because the other guy, it's the houses on the other side.
Yeah.
So, but this is serious. I mean, we're getting to a point that Greece is, their yields are inching up, or not even inching, they're climbing daily. The cost to insure them is prohibitively expensive. And on top of that, there's no confidence there. And tomorrow, it's going to be a vote or the final verdict is a constitutional measure that is looking at Germany's part. So it's a German constitutional vote or review of that. That if they were actually out of compliance in giving the money that they did to bail out the various countries throughout the EU. And this is coming tomorrow. I think 4 a.m. in the morning will be the final vote expected. It's a constitutional issue. So in other words, if they broke the Constitution, there's a few things that could happen. Number one, they could, I guess, theoretically try to get the money back, which isn't going to happen. But secondly, and more importantly, is they can't maybe be involved in any further money without full parliamentary approval. So there's all sorts of very strange things happening.
Well, the Greece – or the Greeks are obviously the test case for what the heck you can do in Europe.
Yeah.
The Italians are biting their times, but whatever the Greeks do, the Italians are going to – if it benefits the Greeks, the Italians will do it 2X.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had the – from the continued saga in the European region, Switzerland, whose currency has been just appreciating at a ridiculous pace. We've talked about this. And especially against the euro, which is one of their major trading partners, so they're getting screwed. It keeps on going up, and they tried their best to knock it down by intervening in the currency markets, a month ago. That lasted about 2 days. So today what they do is they decide they're going to utilize the best way to describe it is a peg to the euro. Drops the Swiss franc down about 8.5% immediately. This morning.
Oh, because the euro is expected to fall.
Yeah, and they're going to peg it at a lower ratio, therefore making their products cheaper, more affordable, especially for the European eurozone buyers. And this is kind of a pathetic situation that is going on around the world. We had the dollar being devalued by 20% over the last year against major other currencies. The yen has been flying also, and they're trying to get G7 intervention. They did it once. It didn't work. And the Swiss currency. So this really stinks to high hell. This is really the root and a new flavor of protectionism. You know?
So what do you think is going to happen in the next few days with a couple of things in particular? Do you think the Dow is going to drop back below 11,000? And question two, do you think the euro is going to drop again below $1.40? And do you think the yen is going to – it went up a little bit today to 77. Do you think it – what is going to happen there?
All right, so starting with the Dow. Now, what's the time frame? A week?
Yeah, this week. Next week I'm going to be in Brazil, so we won't be doing a show.
Okay, so I think that from all I can see, unless there is something – there's a lot of economic data coming out of Europe this week, a lot, besides the vote and all the other things. There's a tremendous amount. So everything is going to hinge on Europe this week. You got the key data that we were looking for today with the ISM non-manufacturing or the service index that came out in the United States, which actually came out better than expected. That was good. And we have the Fed beige book tomorrow that nobody's expecting anything good. In other words, the regional reports about hiring and production and manufacturing. There's not much more on the plate this week for U.S. economics, so that's a good thing. So I don't really see, unless something really severe happens in Europe, I think actually we're going to possibly start trending a little higher towards the end of the week.
Okay.
The selling has been a little bit overdone, or at least in the short term. The second point was the euro. Was that the second point?
Yeah.
Yeah, second point was the euro. Again, it's the same thing. You know, the 140 is a very important line in the sand. It's a round number. And it also, we've seen a drop dramatically in the euro over the last 5 or 6 days. Unless there is something that comes up with the banking system, the vote, or anything else, I think we're going to see a status quo right now. I mean, the banks have been obliterated over the last 10 trading sessions. So I don't think the euro is going to see a significant move unless there is something crazy that goes on. And the yen, nothing's happening with the yen. It's a lost cause. I don't see anything good happening there.
Yeah, well,
I mean, even if you did go to 78, I mean, that's a big jump from right here. Who cares? It's still way below the 85.
Yes, it's way below, or below what it should be, which is 100.
Yeah. So that's all happening. So, but the thing I was curious about, what do you think that if corporations did the things that countries are doing with their currency? So you have two companies that get together and maybe, get together and they say, okay, we don't want your pricing to be that much higher than ours because it really hurts our sales. What would that be called?
Price fixing.
Right, and that's illegal, right?
Yeah, well, supposedly.
But
although it seems as though to me the airlines do it.
Yeah. But I don't understand how the countries – we just seem to let countries get away with this crap because I guess it's good for us. It's our company in a way. I don't know. Stinks to high hell.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You keep saying high. Most people say high heaven.
High heaven.
You say high hell.
High hell. High heaven, high hell.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting. Oh, why don't you tell me what that means eventually? So, the ETFs have been a big reason why markets have been moving for some time. We've talked about these doubles and triples that are used in the late day rallies or falls, and the ability for you to buy one ETF and really have 500 stocks move because of it. Not you or I, but I mean the big boys.
Yeah, the big boys.
So now, lo and behold, the securities regulators in the U.S. are going to be looking into whether or not the ETFs amplified August moves. Now, could you imagine if we had the same kind of crazy moves on the upside? Nothing would be said.
Exactly. That's exactly true. Nothing would be said.
It'd be like, that's great. You know, but if so, all of a sudden you have the markets moving lower, maybe for good reason or not, and everybody's just up in arms. Stop the short selling. You know, everything's got to stop.
This brings us to the Carol Bartz situation, which you have on your list.
Yep.
So Carol Bartz, apparently, we don't have it fully confirmed, but it's pretty obvious it's true, has been released from her position at CEO of Yahoo. And I was a radio station from Washington, D.C. calls me so ever so often for a little comment. And I was thinking about it, and it seems to me that this is kind of a reflection of what you just described. She was a victim of the market. It's really got less to do with Yahoo than it does with the market conditions. I mean, if the market was in a big bear market and everything was cranking up and going crazy, it was the pigs were flying in the hurricane, and the stock went from 15.5 or 16 when she got to the company, and it was now trading at 25, which is still way below where they could have sold the company at 35. But she'd have been still there. But the market conditions themselves required action, even though I don't think you can blame the CEO under these circumstances, personally.
You think it all has to do with – I mean, there's some activist investors that are involved in there now. I think Acbit and a couple other guys, they may have – you know, kind of said, hey, you know what? We got to shake this thing up. It wasn't only just market action. It was the fact they were losing market share. They have no design changes that mean anything. They become, I mean, do you use Yahoo at all? I don't use Yahoo.
I'm on a Yahoo finance site right now.
All right, so you use finance. Do you use anything else? Do you use their mail? Do you use any of their other products? Anything?
No, but I don't really use much more at Google than search.
Okay, so search, you use search, okay? That's the main thing that they're supposed to be.
I mean, but Yahoo search is now just Bing, so who cares? You know what Yahoo does. I think that was the mistake she made. I did credit her with two blunders. One was kind of blowing the deal with Alibaba, which has kind of gone off on its own, even though they own like most of the company, a good share of the company, which is a Chinese deal. And the fact that they got in bed with Microsoft because it was convenient, and nobody in their right mind gets in bed with Microsoft.
Right. And they basically took over one of the – hopefully trying to get the search out of it. And it was almost – after the deal went south and everybody was just chastised – what was the guy's – you know, he's a forgotten name now. Who was the CEO that
Yang?
Turned down – Yang, right.
Jerry.
Right, right.
Jerry Yang.
Jerry Yang. Where is he now?
He's still there. He's still on the board, and he's – maybe he's the chairman. I have to look. But he's still, you know, in behind the scenes, and, you know, I ran into him at some event recently, and he's not the same Jerry Yang he used to be, let's put it that way. A lot of people are adversely affected by great wealth.
He is going to be on my thoughts. This is the kind of guy that's going to be on one of the upcoming Celebrity Apprentices. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's already got more than enough money out of the company to not worry about that.
Well, the problem was that Bartz
came should.
In. Yeah, right. Bartz came in, right? She was just touted as this turnaround specialist.
What did she ever turn around? I don't know. I don't know that she's ever turned around anything. She's a maintenance CEO. She ran Autodesk. She was a maintenance CEO. She did a good job of maintenance, which is fine. I mean, there are turnaround CEOs. There are, you know, growth CEOs. There are maintenance CEOs. There's different kinds of CEOs. You know, fix it. Guys are coming to fix things. Not really turn around, but, you know, a reorg specialist. I mean, there's all these different kinds of CEOs, and she's a maintenance CEO. Seems to me. I could be wrong, but
when she came in, she was billed as this person that's going to totally change the direction enhance shareholder
value. Compared to Terry Semel, the guy who came in to basically change the company completely, and from what everyone I know that worked there says, the guy was never in the office. He was always down in L.A., you know, hanging out in this, you know, in the Hollywood Hills or down at Beverly Hills in the lunch cafeterias or whatever they whatever these people eat.
These people. Those people.
Those people, those Hollywood people.
So she gets canned. You think it was more because the market, which could be because the hedge funds that are the activism that's going on may have tried to turn around the board, but they didn't. The CFO is now taking over as interim. You know, they didn't even bring in anybody as a potential at this point. That's a pretty bad message about how fast they want to get rid of her. By the way, one caveat, the stock is up 7% after hours as soon as this was announced.
Yeah, well, that's just a reaction. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. I think it's a – I think it, to me, I'm still looking at that stock as a short. But I'm starting to look at everything as a short.
Yeah.
If you haven't noticed.
I did notice that. And you're doing very well with that. We'll get to that in a moment. You're, you know, there's this commercial that's on TV. It's there's a man, the only man of his kind. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Netflix guy.
You're going to be the Netflix guy. So
the Apple one's a little sketchier. I noticed it has pulled back a little bit. It's still making money, but it's not, you know.
Speaking about Apple.
But Apple is definitely a short. I'm totally convinced of it now. I haven't written about it. I still – officially, I say that Apple will coast like the Queen Mary because it's, you know, such a big ship. But I'm privately – and, of course, obviously to the few people that listen to this podcast – I really think that Steve Jobs' mojo is so critical to that company's success. And I can't even put my finger on what that mojo is. But once it's gone, I think this thing is going to turn around faster than we all anticipate.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the competition still isn't there. Who knows if it will be? You know, who knows if they'll be able to change, to advance, to create. You know, who knows what's after.
No, and I agree with a lot of that. In fact, I was chatting casually on the phone with Michael Dell, of all people. Mm. We had a long talk, which was off the record. But I make sure people are aware of the fact that I do talk to these people. And Michael mentioned, because I was grilling him about his, you know, his pads. You know, the pad, your pad is stinks. It wasn't doing very well. He says he's concluded that the and I don't think this is off the record, obviously, because it's obvious by what they're doing. But he's concluded there is no pad tablet market. It's an iPad market, period.
Oh, I could go with that.
I think it's so obvious. Always felt that. Not always, but within the last month or so, I felt that. It's like you put one next to anything else, and then if you had a choice, if they're the same price and everything, all things considered, which would you buy? You'd buy the iPad. You would be crazy not to. It's better.
Right. Right. And to come in second or third behind it, just a joke because –
doesn't make – who cares?
I do have a question about Apple for you, this mysterious loss of the iPhone prototype that went missing in a restaurant. Obviously sounds incredibly similar to what happened last time.
Yeah, coincidentally. Coincidence?
You can't tell me they tried the same PR trick twice. And what would be the point?
Well, you get even more PR because people like you just now point out the similarity and give it a little more oomph.
All right. Do you think this is true? Do you think this is this actually happened? Do you think it's a PR stunt, or do you think it's just I don't know. It the whole thing is.
Well, I all I know is the last time they did this, they had to follow through because they you know you can't file false police reports. So they had to let somebody get arrested. And I mean, I don't know who's in on these stunts, but it seems pretty dubious to me that there'd be prototypes floating around in the real world that get left. I mean, if I'm working for Apple or I'm connected in such a way that they give me this iPhone 5 and they put the fear of God in me, I'm going to leave it at a bar.
No. You're going to handcuff it to yourself.
It's not going to happen.
Right. You know what this is? You know what this is? Another thing that stinks to high heaven hell.
Stinks to high hell.
Yep. Stinks to high hell. All right. So on to more gloomy situations. So the government, this is all over the place these days. You know, the Obama administration is now asking Congress to grant a 90-day extension. So the U.S. Postal Service, which by some people that I know as accounts is always making money. But seems they have to pay this mandatory annual retirement benefit, this payment of about $5.5 billion, which they do not have the money to do. So they're going to give them some more time to work this whole thing out. So the this is money that's due, obviously, to their retirement plan.
Let's take a look. What is Obama going to be the one president in all of the United States history that closes the postal service? Is that what we're angling for here? Is that what he wants as his legacy?
He couldn't close Gitmo. I don't think
he couldn't close Gitmo, but he could close the post office. Are you telling me that's what it's going to turn out to be? You think that's going to work for him in his reelection campaign?
You know what he should do? He's got that internet switch. He just should flick it and mess people up with email and make them go back to
regular mail. Take the Gitmo guys and put them in working for the post office. That'll straighten them out.
Yeah, exactly. You got plenty of them out there. But obviously, these are just these news items that have to be splashed across the screen. But we're talking about a lot of money, $5.5 billion. That they're short.
Take it from the bankers.
Yeah. Well, that leads us to our next story. That it's amazing that on one hand you see the Fed and the powers that be trying to revive the banks, right? Doing everything they can to keep interest rates down, to make sure that there's enough liquidity. And then you have another part of the government coming after the banks for hundreds of billions of dollars. 17 banks in total are being sued. For about $167 billion because of the bad mortgages that Fannie and Freddie bought from these organizations. Now, on one hand, you say, well, didn't the people that bought the mortgages in Fannie and Freddie, didn't they look at what the deals were? Or did they just trust Goldman and Merrill and Countrywide and Bank of America? Did they just trust them implicitly just to take it off their hands and buy it? And the $167 billion, doesn't that just unwind all the good that was done with the bailouts?
It's baffling. I have no idea what they're thinking.
And Goldman's at like 104 right now.
Yeah.
Well. And Bank of America is again sub 7 or right at $7. And the rest of the banks are just in bad shape.
So I'm looking at your little note here. You have Credit Suisse at 2.93. What is that? What is the 2.93%?
No, 12.93.
I mean 12.9.
Yeah, that was today's return. Today.
Really?
Yes, today.
Credit Suisse has got a 12% return?
Negative.
Oh, negative return.
These are all negatives.
Oh, okay. So this is not – that's not a dividend. I thought it was like maybe the 12 – No.
This is what the banks went down today. Credit Suisse went down
12.5%. Oh, they went down. Okay, now I'm sorry. I was missing.
Well, Bank of Scotland down 12.7%. UBS down 10.5%.
Yeah.
You know, so they're just getting just
and the financials, of course, historically by stock market watchers, lead the market down and lead the market up.
Yeah.
And because of this, I would assume that my thinking to short is not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean the European markets are far worse this year than the U.S. markets. Yeah, you know, S&P's down 7.5%. Dow's 3 or 4%, and you look at the major exchanges over in Europe. I mean, we're talking, the DAX, the German market's down 20-ish%. Let me talk about Greece, down 40%. The CAC, the French, is down 18%. I mean, they're really just getting obliterated over there. And it's really a big problem. We're talking some severe, and from the high to where it is now, we're talking probably 30-something percent recently. You know, this is if you remember back in 2008, the markets were down 39%, and everybody thought the sky was falling. Everything was – it was all over. You know, you're talking about a 30-something percent drop in the last 4 months for these markets. The same thing.
Right, and this is after all the free money we gave them.
Yep, exactly. Well, some of this also is because these banks are also – the banks that are being sued, the 17, are not just U.S. banks. They're also – I think that UBS was in there. But many of these banks hold a lot of the debt from the various bad countries. And they're holding inside of their portfolios, and they're just getting – that's a big problem with their holdings. If they have to take a haircut, the commentary – I think it was today by a few different players was that if they take a haircut due to a default, these banks are going to be in significant trouble. And on top of it all, what's happening is liquidity is drying up. I put out a piece and showed all the liquidity measures – in terms of the LIBOR rates and the swaps, et cetera. I mean, we're really starting to spike pretty high. And there's one particular one, which is a three-month euro swaps, which if you look at them and just forget what they are, but just look at the number, basically they were 75, negative 75 recently. So it cost a lot more on the euro side of the swap. And the commentary is that if it gets to negative 100, you got a big problem. If it gets to negative 150, you're right back to the layman levels. Hmm. Well, today it hit negative 100.7. That is a giant red flashing light. And that means that it is costing a lot more and a lot more concern with anybody lending money, giving money, overnight rates, the liquidity factors for those banks. And what could happen is that you have a run on the banks from not just the individuals and consumers, but you have a run on the banks from other banks that are just not going to lend to them because they're afraid they're not going to get their money back. And this is part of the process when banks, the interbank lending programs are very important to make sure that liquidity stays with all the banks. And when they start drying up, that's exactly what happened in the financial crisis with our banks. That all just dried up.
Right.
So, and then you have, again, back to the point of you have now the government suing them. And then on top of that, Goldman, you know, Manhattan District Attorney's Office is now filing some lawsuits because when the release of the U.S. Senate subcommittee back in April came out, the report that came out of that meeting, they're looking into the root causes of the crisis from 2008. And one of the prominent featured players in this was Goldman. That they were a big reason for all of this, which is something I think everybody talked about and speculated about a year and a half ago. And the government took a year and a half to get to figure this out, I guess.
Yeah. Not good.
Yeah. So the IPO market's getting a little bit dry. Groupon now is canceling its roadshow and is reevaluating its plans to go public, which I think is a good idea because I always thought that was going to be a flop, although I would have enjoyed a nice big fat short on it.
I think they should have done it anyway because you might be right. It would have been a flop, but at least it would have gotten out of it. Now I don't know if they can ever do it again. I think they're going to be stuck holding the bag.
Part of it was their fault also. You know, they had some really bad accounting tricks they were playing, and the CEO has a big mouth, and he's very braggadocious, and thank you. And he was very much starting to get, I think, under the skin of many of the analysts and the underwriters out there, concerned that, you know, he's going to be a loose cannon. So you can't control the CEO. You can't control where the stock goes, right?
Right.
So now Zynga, which is the company we've talked about.
Zynga.
The company we talked about, which is a great model, and they do the gaming and mobile platform gaming. Great company, great revenue. Is now reevaluating there, saying market conditions maybe are not appropriate for, you know, getting involved in an IPO at this point. Meanwhile, speaking of IPOs, Goldman, one of the lead underwriters of Dunkin' Donuts, put the kibosh on the shares today.
What did they do?
So they basically said they lowered it, I think, to a sell or neutral or something, which is essentially a sell.
It's their own stock.
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty terrible.
Yep, pretty terrible. So the stock was down about 4%, and it managed to get to flat today. So anyway, you wrote an article this week. You know, you talked about Michael Dell a moment ago. You wrote an article for MarketWatch this week, and you talked about how – I don't know if you were serious about this because I couldn't imagine you
were. By the way, is the reason that Dell called me.
Oh, is that – yeah. I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, my gosh, you're saying that Dell is going to basically take over from Apple and HP, and they have everything they need to do – to do it besides, the plan, right? So are you serious about this? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, they've already kind of taken over the – nobody wants the PC business. So let's start with that, including Dell. And Dell explained to me that in their analyst meeting, they revealed all this. So this is not out of class by any means, that they really aren't the same company they once were. They're more like IBM than they are like Dell. And if you look at their numbers, they don't make as much money. I mean, their sales haven't gone up, but they make more profits. And it's not because of layoffs, because they've actually hired 9,000 people. Mm-hmm. it's because they've changed the business model. They're not. They're more of an. If you whatever IBM's doing, there, Dell's basically copying the same idea.
Service oriented.
Yeah. We sell servers, and they says that you know the reason they're staying in the PC business is because it's considered an error in judgment for HP to bail out of the PC business because there's too many, not a lot, but there's just enough of large corporations that say we'll buy your servers. But we want everything from you. We want the desktop PCs from you too, and HP will sell you the servers, but they won't sell you the desktop PC. So it gives Dell an advantage over mm-hmm. both HP and IBM to sell everything. Mm-hmm. And it's a different company. And I you know the piece was probably he was not happy with it, and I told him, hey, I put the stock as a buy, so you know, and he couldn't really argue with me too much about that. So the column basically was a uninformed. Well, I do this once in a while. It was interesting though. It was an interesting column, but so what you ever whatever your criticism is probably valid. What were you going to say?
I guess you're saying that Dell has all the parts to make a car, but they have no idea how to make it. I mean, you're saying they have all the pieces of the puzzle, but they can't execute. So you basically were dissing management.
No, I wasn't. Was I?
I don't know. If you say all Dell has to do is execute, I think that's...
I use the word execute in there? I don't think so.
I
think you extrapolated.
All Dell has to do is execute. I would not... All right. We're going to go to MarketWatch. We're going to go to MarketWatch.
I better do a better column this next week.
Well, it's right on the front page, as a matter of fact. Dell can dominate PC world. This is the perfect opportunity to wrest control of the U.S. PC business from Apple and HP and take over in China as well. All Dell has to do is execute.
That was written by the editors.
Okay. Sorry.
I probably implied that. But when hearing the pitch that apparently they presented the analysts, who did a very poor job of communicating it to anybody, by the way, mm-hmm. And I would also criticize Dell for their, you know, lame public relations, in so far as getting the word out. It's a, you know, essentially the company has changed its stripes to such an extreme that everything I said in that column is essentially meaningless.
Well, maybe they took your criticisms to heart, mm-hmm. realizing your lengthy tenure in the technology industry and your mingling with other executives over time, and say, you know what, Dvorak's got a point.
Yeah, they may. That's always a long shot possibility. But my experience with all these CEOs, and I know a number of them, a lot of them, most of them, is they never see it that way.
Yeah,
they never see that somebody has a point. Unless, and if they do, they would never admit it. But in this case, I think Michael is correct. Mm. So I was misanalyzing the situation. And I think it's a good, valid column, but I think the overall situation was misanalyzed. Let's put it that way.
So let's leave it as the column was a general discussion that was more food for thought than anything else.
Which most of my columns, I think, fall in that category.
Okay. Okay.
It's mostly food for thought. It's not all like right. I'm, you know, digging that. You know, I mean, I do with some technologies that show up, I'll get deeply into it. But when it comes to the thought process within a corporation, I mean, what are they thinking? And I write about it because I try to imagine what they're thinking. I'm only imagining what they're thinking. I don't know what they're really thinking.
So you don't start your articles with the idea of how can I piss off the most amount of people that will comment? You don't do that, right?
A lot of people think I do, but I don't actually. I really
how
don't.
I mean,
people, I'm accused of that constantly, but I think it just comes natural to me, so I don't think I actually try that.
What can I do? Who can I piss off today? Who haven't I pissed off for a while? Michael Arrington, speaking of people you'd love to probably piss off, he is the founder of TechCrunch, as you know, a very popular site at one time. It was bought by, I guess, AOL, right? And it seems that – I guess he was another guy that was canned. He was canned as the editor of the
– Well, he's got conflicts of interest, and then the Huffington Post people and Adriana, they have this this old-fashioned notion about what you can and cannot do as a writer, no matter what you disclose. And, you know, nobody ever thought – Arrington was just reporting like some stooge out of the Columbia J School, but right. they felt that he was his conflicts were too much, and so they said you can run our little our investment company, which he just as soon run his own, and get out of the magazine, or you know he can write once in a while, but we're going to keep an eye on you. And he found that offensive, I guess.
Yeah, but now I think he does have something like $25 million or something of that nature in this fund that he's going to be managing, or at least what AOL gave him or something.
I think he made $25 or $35 million.
But now he's trying to buy back the site with that?
Yeah, I don't get it.
How does that work?
I don't know. I don't know why he's doing it. I think it's just publicity for him, or I have no idea.
But doesn't that mean that AOL is going to buy it twice?
No,
they bought it, and then they're going to buy it again through this fund? And he's going to have control of it?
I don't know. I have no idea. Now that you bring up that, I have no idea. I thought he was going to try to buy it back for himself personally.
I don't know. I thought he was going to use the money from this crunch fund,
huh.
which I thought was part of the money that he was given from AOL.
That would be a great game. I mean, it reminds me of guys who used to be a winery in Sonoma County, remain nameless. They used to go bankrupt routinely about once every 3 years, and then they buy back the place at fire sale prices, you know, all the equipment and everything and the land, and then they go back in business and they go bankrupt again. They do it again. Hmm. It was like a real moneymaker.
It's like what happens down here in Florida. You know, there was this canker epidemic with the oranges, and the government would give you all sorts of money to burn down your orange fields. So they burn them all down and let be there for a year or two and then just plant oranges again. What a great deal that is.
Yeah. Whatever.
Anyway, bearish bets on the Standard & Poor's 500 index by investors are at the highest they've been in years, almost 4 years, as you know, everybody's real concerned about the whole global growth discussion. And what that means is that this is what's called commitment of traders. Every week it comes out, and they look at the futures, and they say all these futures are now either short or they sold the longs. So the professionals really went short last week. I mean, really took it down, which means that helped to push down the markets. But also one of the things it means is it could be a bit of a contrarian situation, because if the markets get a pop, you're going to see a lot of these futures get turned around and the shorts get squeezed. And therefore what happens is that you get these big moves in the market, which is kind of what you've seen lately. Kind of either goes down a lot or goes up a lot. Nothing in between.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a selling opportunity. I think that's probably exactly what's going to happen. You're going to see a bunch of people covering because, you know, the market, I don't think it's going to get – I don't think it can push itself below, 1,100?
11. Yeah, well, 1,120 is a big number, but yeah, 1,100.
1,100, let's say. Just a nice round number. And if it bounces back a little bit and it starts to look like it might be easing back up, the shorts might just bail, mm-hmm. which will run the thing up, which will make all the shorts bail because they're all panic. And then it'll be sitting precariously up too high, and it'll be a the selling opportunity, seems to me, because this thing is I don't see it.
Well, you know, one of the arguments that you just made was for short selling. You know, the argument against short selling is that they artificially push down markets and they're bad people and terrible, and who's going to bet against it? It's like kind of, you know, betting the cum line in craps. You know, everybody hates the guy that bets
the no pass line.
Yeah. So everybody hates those guys, right? You know, everybody's playing one way, and this one guy in the corner is sitting there betting against you the whole time.
Yeah, betting against
like,
everybody.
Get out of here, you know?
Right. And the funny thing about craps is it's a social game, so you're the pariah.
Yeah, same thing with the markets. You know, markets are only supposed to go up even though things may be bad and even though companies are not performing, et cetera. But when you have all these shorts in the market, there is a point that markets are not going to go down any further, whatever that point is. So if you have all these shorts that, you know, really ganged up on the markets and it did this, they're going to eventually buy. Now, they'll buy before the average investor will buy because they're still concerned that it's going to go down further.
Right.
So what usually starts the rally from any low point is a short covering rally, which then leads to the next level of
if there is to be one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And no. I'm 100% on board with your notions regarding short selling and actually after doing the show for long enough, I've actually now concluded along with you that any market that doesn't allow it or that's legislated against is an extremely at extreme risk.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. They had to shut down.
And it makes people that are involved in that sort of thinking are incompetent boneheads. That's the third thing.
There's a short-selling ban on several countries, especially in the financials, in several countries in Europe. Well, yesterday, with the short sell banning, by the way, they had to halt the financial stocks within the index because they were getting beaten up so badly. Now, I don't know about you. Again, you know, in a prize fight, if somebody throws in the towel, you just got to stop the fight and all that, right? But, you know, on the other hand, if we saw a 25%, remember the day that Bank of America went up like 20-something percent?
Right.
I didn't hear anybody saying, you know, that's a little bit too much. You know, that's a little – you know, buyers really need to slow down here because what they're doing is really everybody's smiling that the shorts are getting beaten up. Just like, you know, you keep on hitting your number in craps and you get the guy keeps on bleeding money on the don't pass line. Everybody's happy as can be. You know, and they're buying him, you know, they're buying him drinks.
Yeah, keep it up. Stay there, keep buddy. Because everyone's so superstitious.
Right. So right now there's a question of whether this is going to push markets lower or it's going to be a contrarian signal. And right now, like I said, this week I would lay odds, if we're still talking the Vegas vernacular, that you're going to see a little bit of a softer move. I mean, the markets have really taken a beating. There's going to be a little bit of a break here until we see some other news that is really moving. If there's none, it's going to trend up. It doesn't have to be a lot, but it'll trend up somewhat.
Selling opportunity.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. I mean, don't forget the big guys out there, the mutual fund managers, the analysts from the major funds and firms and investment bankers, they're all talking still about anywhere between, you know, 1250 to 1400 by year end. We're talking, you know, that's with this drop. So in other words, they've constantly had the same numbers. And yet, you know, we're right now, what, 15-18% away from the top end. In only 3 months that has to be done.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah. Seems like we'll see again what happens. Tomorrow will be a big day, and then also Obama's speech. Now, what do you think Obama is going to talk about in his groundbreaking speech that is going to invigorate?
Well, it's going to be that, you know, it's going to be a normal campaign speech with a bunch of bull crap. He's going to blast the Republicans, try to put out a good message. But I still think I mentioned it earlier in the show. I think he's got this cockamamie scheme to create some phony baloney, you know, non-working class, intern class or whatever, of some sort. It's you know, people are looking forward, definitely looking forward to the football game that will follow.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe what one of the things that he'll also do is actually for the payments, the $2 a week that you get for banging out license plates, maybe you put them on the job roll to say they're working. Right?
We will now count prisoners as employed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They get money. Why not? You know, and as a matter of fact,
we've got
anybody,
a huge prison population. There's nothing like it in the world.
And anybody who's getting Social Security is a payment. And all they have to – they're working. So now our employment rate just went to 4%.
Yeah, that's always
how
a
great is that?
Yeah.
How great is that?
And anyone who fills out a form for unemployment, they're working too because it takes effort.
Right. And if you died within a year, you're working.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Only up to a year. So let's see. Something happened today in the market. So we saw that the markets opened up, gapped lower by 2.5% this morning on Tuesday, and then they kind of came back a little bit. The service number came out. There was some questionable areas. The number came out better, but the costs were higher, and some of the hiring was light. And then the market rolled back down towards the lows, and then it kicked back up. Now at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon or so, there was a news item that came out being reported on. Another other than CNBC, saying that Bernanke put out a letter recently, or a letter was revealed that showed that he said that U.S. financial companies' exposure to the European sovereign debt crisis is manageable. Well, that's good to hear, right? You know, that doesn't really, you know, that he says it's not a big deal. They can manage it, and whatever the inference is from there about how he'll help. But when looked into further, the truth was that was a letter that he wrote in July.
Ooh.
But that wasn't seemingly reported.
Well, you have to leave out some things once in a while. You don't want to upset the public.
Yeah, that's a good point. You just leave out some of the key points, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the thing was written in 1932 by Hitler.
Right.
Just leave it out.
Just leave it out, yeah. All right, and then finally, let's see. We had one more thing. We saw that oil is moving up again, although it moved down a little bit here on our side. But the other side, which is the Brent crude, the it's a finer what's the word I'm looking for? Blend, if you well, it's not a blend, but a finer type of crude. It's more expensive. It's a lot of it comes from either Libya or for a variety of other Middle Eastern countries. And Europe uses that. And Europe is on that pricing structure. So we're talking about the oil here per barrel is, what, 85 or so per barrel? The Brent is like 113.
Yeah, Brent's a little high.
So the problem is that you have this $26 spread between the two, which what's interesting about that is that gasoline price usually goes off of the Brent, of course. And when you notice that you haven't seen a big drop in gas prices, but yet oil is down from 100 and whatever, 10 to 85, that's a big drop. Gas hasn't followed. But more importantly, this is another problem for Europe. They're stuck paying these higher prices on the Brent side. And, you know, this is an area that's under austerity, under severe pressure. So they're just another problem for the European region. So there you go. What else do you have on your docket?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No, let's take a look at the stocks. Boy. Oh, we almost have another clean sweep of green.
Yep. JCPenney up 25%. By the way, this is all available. You can see this live Google spreadsheet that updates. And I encourage you, if anybody that wants to do this, you could actually – it's very easy to set these up, and it will pull all the data in from Google Finance and update your stocks and your – gains or losses in real time. Well, maybe a few minute delay, but relatively real time, so you could track the portfolio. And this we have where we talk about different stocks. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security, just some ideas that may be out there floating around, and we do it for just some fun to see how, you know, things we how we can do and some things that may be interesting. We may hold or not any of the securities that we mention, and of course any investment entails risk, so just be aware of that.
So,
what do we have?
Well,
Netflix. Who has – did you pick – did I pick Netflix? No, you picked Netflix.
You wish.
Up 18.5%, even up 2% today. But you know what happened? Last week, the deal with Starz fell apart and dropped.
Yeah,
that 8%.
That helped me quite a bit.
Yeah, and that is a – now they're saying that this may be a point where companies are no longer willing to pay the kind of rates –
right,
you know, and do the deals that they're doing with Netflix.
Right, this puts me in the driver's seat because now I can't. I mean, this is a winning investment at this point because if it turns around, I'm still cleared at the 10% change level. So I'm in business. In fact,
you're
all
in
these
business.
Stocks are in pretty good shape.
Yep, Spreadtrum Communications really doing well. We actually sold that last Friday for our clients. We made a nice. We made about, I think, close to 24% on it, something like that. And when the market started getting a little bit kind of lousier, and we started to see the kind of the consolidation of Spreadtrum. We said, you know what, let's take it off the table right now and keep our profit. And that's one of the better things you could do in a market that is seeing this kind of choppiness. Take some profits when you can because they're not always very easily available. Your European Pro Shares Ultra is up 14.5%.
Yeah, but I'll give you some credit for that because you actually I was on the edge and you talked me into that one. Although
yeah,
I wanted
we own that,
to do
we own
it.
That. We own that as for our clients as well.
Yeah, it's
and
a good one.
Very well.
It's a good it's a winner.
Yep. EEV we actually sold today. We sold when it was a bit higher. It opened up up about 6% today, 7%, and then just started creeping back throughout the day as the indices here came up and Brazil was on fire again, one of the biggest holdings inside of that because they dropped their interest rates and they're seeing a much more dovish central bank, so their market drop is another 3% today after getting smacked for the last however long. Aflac got hurt again. It's back to they hold a high level of the European preferred, so you see Europe go down. Aflac's going to get hurt as well. Your rent track is up 13.5%. Now, you may make up for your Nigerian oil situation with this one. It's
another
possible.
Long shot dog. That
doing great.
At least, you know, the Nigerian thing, if I was thinking clearly, I would have shorted it.
Well, looking back, of course.
Of course.
You never know. There still could be some major find there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be.
A body.
Yeah. You're up on Apple. You were up a little bit higher. You were up at about 3.5-4%, but it came back 1.5%, I think, today. So you're up still 1.5% on Apple, which is great. Dunkin' Brands were down a little bit on. So I have two ideas of stocks that may be worth looking at, and I put, if you want to, for you, Dell on there as a buy after I read your piece.
No.
But I was thinking after I heard your discussion, you're probably going to want to take it off. So there you go.
Well, so I think it's a buy in a good market, but in this market, I'm not long. I'm not going long with anything, seriously.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going long with two.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. I wish you all. Yeah, I think oil services is a good one. Fertilizer. I'm not going to argue against it because I still think there's certain properties and things that I think are good long term bets. During a depression. There was a number of studies done after the depression of the 30s, done by some European analysts, and they discovered that. And I would recommend people think about this. I'm not recommending you do it, but think about it. In the third year of a downturn, certain real estate values hit rock bottom, and the ones that recover the fastest and actually provide a huge yield over the next 8 years. Is farmland.
Farming. Yeah. That makes sense. People have to eat.
So both of these are kind of, or at least the fertilizer one is definitely related to that. But again, like I said, I'm not, except for farmland, and I don't know if there's a farmland play in the market. There might be.
There could be some REITs out there that do that, but I'm not really familiar. I mean, the farmland plays would be something like, deer.
Yeah,
maybe they need that. There could be a company called Lindsay, which makes the sprinkler systems for farms.
I still want more of the real estate angle than the equipment angle, personally.
I am not aware of any farmland REIT.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I'm sure.
Go buy raw land.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Then you hold it forever.
It until 2020, and then that's where it peaks.
Right. So the two that I'm talking about, RPC is an oil service company. They do a lot of work in the area of supplying for major oil drilling, et cetera. It's a very volatile stock. It has a good fundamental base. It can really move a lot. I'll tell you right now, it has that potential to move a lot. And it was down as I think 6% for a while today when the market just got kind of crushed this morning. Ended up 3% down, which really is not a big deal for this stock in a rough market. And the fundamentals are solid. Technicals are, again, a little bit wonky right now because of what's going on. But still, if we see a little bit of an upturn, this has the chance to really ramp. And CF Industries has been the fertilizer play, like a Potash or Intrepid Potash, a Mosaic.
Yeah, I never heard of them.
You should see the chart. You should look at the chart of them. They have held up really, really well in the last however long, considering all that's gone on. Really well. Close to an all-time high, as a matter of fact.
Let me go look.
Let's take a look here. I'm going to pull up the chart. I'm going to look at CF. They could be at an all-time high today. 186 is the 52. Oh, no, excuse me. 192 is the high. So it's at 185 and change. Very expensive stock.
It's a nice looking chart.
Yep. The thing you have to realize is that a lot of people don't like to buy stocks that are high priced. But if they move up 2%, it's 2%, whether it's a high priced stock or it's a low priced stock. So, you just buy less shares. So what? You're still making the same percent on your money. So we like this stock. These are two that actually we own for our clients. Hmm. So just as a full disclosure. And they've increased their dividend on a regular basis, which is nice. They pay about, not a big dividend, but an average of about, I think they paid the last four dividends, 80 cents. No big deal. And they have 52-week range of 92 to 192. 96% institutionally owned, which is good. Its beta is actually low, which means it's less volatile than the markets, generally speaking. And I know you like to talk a little bit about PE, but PE is 13, which is – I'm not a big PE guy. But, 13, which is not a very big thing. And earnings per share is 14, which means it's – it's technically earning a decent amount of money. Considering its price. So that's what you have to look at. And in the field of it, again, it's Terra Nitrogen, Mosaic, Scott's, LBS. That's another one we like. LSB, excuse me. That's another one. Small cap, LXU is very volatile. But anyway, so that's what I have. Anything, do you want to put anything short or?
No.
Anything?
No, I got nothing. No, I've thought about it, and it's nothing I can come up with.
Nothing.
No. Nothing. Should I just dream something up?
You just said Yahoo a minute ago. I mean, I don't know. You're thinking Yahoo?
Yahoo, I think, is, you know, it's like bouncing around the bottom. I can't imagine. It could go down to lower. Oh, well, they did have a bounce. What is Yahoo looking at after they all jacked up about Carol?
6% up. So it'll probably have a bit of fall through because of all the excitement. You know, you could pick a price to short it at if you wanted to.
What is it? Let me look at it. What's it? Y? What's the
Y-H-O-O. Y-H-O-O.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, it did bounce.
It's up 6.25%. It's up 13.72 right now. So if you look at the chart over the last however many years, it looks obviously pathetic. So it's at 13. So let's see what that would be. That would be, it's even below that. Oh, yeah. I mean, technically, I get over...
Yeah, I get the feeling that people get all jacked up when they bring in a new CEO. So there's still it's too much opportunity for the thing to go up and wipe me out because you're only talking about a point and a half to be 10%, which would trigger the sell on our game that we play. People should realize it's a very rigid game. No.
Okay, I gotcha. No. Let's see. The stock is down in five years. The stock is down 56%. In 1 year, it's down 5.5%, and the year to date is down 22%.
Yeah,
yuck.
No, it's definitely a dog to watch. But
yeah. I'll tell you something else, by the way. Just a side note: you talk about losses. I was looking at hedge fund levels this weekend.
Yeah,
and look at some of the big players like Bruce Berkowitz at Fairholme is down, I don't know, close to 29% year to date, and Paulson's down like 37% in his leveraged fund, and it's a whole host of guys that are just getting their butts kicked.
Yeah. You know,
they have a lot of bets on the financials.
Oh, well, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, they double down on them, too.
Let's take a look at some of the stocks that are trading on the FinViz homepage might
great
be interesting.
Site.
Pergo.
Pergo is PRGO?
Yeah, somebody's dumping it.
That's a very good generic pharmaceutical and supplier. It's kind of like J&J in a way.
I think someone's just getting out. I don't think that means anything. Trans Design, a bunch of insiders bought. LGF, the Lionsgate Entertainment, somebody bought $77 million worth.
Well, that's after, don't forget that, after some MD. Look at that. That's after Icon dropped his deal. So I guess they want in because Icon's out.
As a doctor, so that's to me.
Yeah, you should short it.
The yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Doctor, especially if he goes through the trouble of actually putting the MD on his name.
Right.
Yes, yeah, like a dentist is only the only worst to kiss of death. That's an interesting idea to short because look at the stock. It kind of did a dipsy do. It's a very interesting chart.
Let me see the chart because
let's look at this chart. Lionsgate, it kind of like
right, it went up to 7 because Icon was trying to get this deal at 7, and he wrote it up, and he said, "Finally, I'm out of this deal. I'm done. I'm not doing it." And he had a lot of problems with management. He was really pretty negative on management, and that was you see the spike down is when Icon was out of the deal. So that was what 3 or 4 days ago, and now the question is, you know, is there going to be another suitor? Are they going to come in for more?
If you look at the chart action, it had this like a loop. It was like kind of going up. Then it just took a nosedive to I guess, what does that look like?
About 6.25.
6.25. And then it kind of, with the Icon thing sneaking into the picture, it snuck its way up. It could have gone God knows where. And then he bailed out, so it stuck up at 7-something. It's probably a short.
I mean, you know, it's entertainment. It's
entertainment
also
does well in a down economy. That's the only thing that concerns me. But these companies are production companies. God knows what they're up to.
And somebody just put in $77 million. That's a pretty hunky share.
That's a lot of money for a doctor. What does this guy do for a living?
Actually, he did this on let's look at the date there for 1 second. He did it on August 29th. That may not have been the best day to do this. You know, I have to look. Let's just take 1 second and look at when Icon pulled out of this, the exact
date. You got your Bloomberg terminal up?
I don't have that up. I'll have it, but let's just take a look. Icon pulled when? Let me see if I can. They did a comment September 2nd. What's below this here? Here. Yeah, I think it was that day. It could have been that day. On the 31st, because it was a hot stock that day. So he obviously was Icon agrees to sell Lionsgate the 30th. And this guy bought it on the 31st.
Hmm. That's odd.
Yeah, the day after. Unless it was a, I don't know, I'm sure it wasn't a planned deal, unless he wasn't going to do anything with Icon, decided to come in after Icon because he thought Icon would probably just take the company and, you know, re-engineer it and spit it out somehow.
So he thought it was a good idea to buy without Icon.
Without Icon, because Icon is, you know, he could, his
yeah, no, he wrecks, he's a company wrecker. It's a wrecking mm-hmm. ball.
Right. So I wonder if this guy, if there's any history of this guy, we could track him some way, which we probably can't. Oh, maybe we could, and see if he's actually done this kind of thing
click
before.
Click on him here. See, there's a whole bunch. Here's his activity of on. He's on. Apparently, he's big into Leap Wireless, Lionsgate, Key Energy Services.
Wait, Leap Wireless, this guy?
Yeah. Laurel Space and Communications.
He's a director of this, yeah.
And he's a huge Lionsgate buyer. Buy. He's going to own the damn company pretty soon.
I mean, ready to get all his money. Look at how many. Are you kidding me? Look at these numbers.
Yeah, the guy's like a billionaire. Goodness.
Every time he buys something, he must be a good doctor.
This guy's one heck of a doctor.
I mean, since March, he's been buying $7 million at a clip at Lionsgate. What does he like so much about it? He must be a movie.
Hey, Doc, my arm hurts when I do this. Yeah, don't do that.
Look at the numbers you're talking. Oh, this is his share total. Wow. A million here, a million there, a million. I mean, he now has amassed, what, 40 million shares of Liongate.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. And he's averaged down all the way from, oh, he's been nines, a lot of nines. A lot of nines, a lot of nines, 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 nines.
Five.
A few five, 16. That was different. No, it's Laurel. It's different. And then he did sixes, and sevens. Wow. He made some money on this, it looks like.
I don't know. I have no idea who this guy is.
What? Can I ask you a silly question?
Mark Wachesky.
Why does he have all companies that start with the letter L?
He's superstitious.
Leap, Laurel, and Lionsgate. And he's got
Keg. It's just Keg.
Well, that's just because it's right before L.
H-I-J-K-L. Key Energy Services, Oil and Gas Drilling. I get the sense he's a 10% owner, and he's been buying that up.
He sold it. No, and then he sold it all.
Oh, right. These are sales. That's right. He sold all that. So he's out of energy.
Hmm.
Everything else he's buying is,
pretty impressive, whoever this guy is.
Well, it would be kind of challenging to go against him and say, yeah, short the sucker. It's kind of a, you know, I'm going to give him his due and not do anything.
All right. We'll see how the doctor performs.
See how the doctor operates.
Well, anyway. All right, so we'll talk next week. Lots to discuss next week, as I'm sure we're going to see a tremendous amount of interesting stories come up and definitely talk about the unbelievable getting people back to work campaign that's going to go on.
Yeah, well, of course, we'll be discussing that the week after because I will be gone next week. I'll be traveling. But I'm sure the news will build up.
Yes, it will, and I'll make sure to make a nice list for us when you get back. You're going to do the Brazilian meals where they cut the meat off of the skewers?
The churrascaria.
Yeah, I went this weekend to one of those, actually.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, the ones in Brazil are a lot different than the copycat ones they try to do here by a lot. And, I sometimes go there. I'd like to – there's a couple of really good restaurants in Sao Paulo that I like a lot. I might go to one or two of them. But the churrascaria is always very entertaining, and the food, especially in a couple of these places, is just phenomenal.
Why don't you take some pictures so we could see it and, you know, we could have it available.
I'm always taking pictures. I got plenty of pictures.
Yeah, take some picture of you with something, you know, maybe on the beach with some
– with an Ipanema girl.
Yes. That's what I was thinking.
All right.
Well, enjoy yourself, and I hope you have a good time.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.